It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. We are off and running on this, the 29th day of June, 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is, in fact, where we live, and that is where you go if you would like to jump into the madcap multimedia real-time, merry, wacky, zany, conversational extravaganza that is The Horn chat room that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program is live every Monday through Friday from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Yep, just pick yourself out a screen name and a password, jump right in, and you'll be greeted by Jug of Punch, and Kay, and Squeaky, and Steve from Georgistan, and VT Blum, and many others as the course of the evening unfolds. All moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has chosen not to fold space today because I take it it is that Northern California is an inhospitable part of the planet this afternoon. So, you know, jump in. You'll enjoy yourself. We'll have fun. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday today, and we have a veritable bouquet of roses that are, you know, with the roses clipped off, you know, Morticia Adams style. Nothing but thorns. Ow! Right. Yeah. So I know many of you have wondered, Thomas over at FYINation.com is still with us, as he predicted, and is recuperating in hospital and not enjoying the food very much. But I have berated him and told him to damned well get well and get rested up, because pretty soon we're going to look at him and say, coffee break's over. Back on your head. Yeah. That's that little update. Again, Thorn in the Side Thursday, and let's see. I ran across a little something that sort of puts things in perspective. Did you know, and, you know, because marketing, did you know that if you are worried about your longevity, and if you've got a thing for alternative medicine, you can get the same Eleuthero root, cordyceps mushrooms, and nascent iodine for your diet. Did you know you can buy them from both Gwyneth Paltrow at Goop, where she also sells jade vagina eggs and so forth. Or you can buy the very same crap with a different name on it, relabeled, rebranded, over at Alex Jones's website. Because that kind of thing, it is as the article I'm looking at over at Rawstory is multi-level marketing schemes are a staple among right-wing methods of generating revenue, and they've made it over to the goofball side with people like Gwyneth Paltrow. I mention that because we don't have any of that. Maybe someday I'll market some barbecue slaw or my own barbecue sauce or something like that. Not right now, though. And no, all we've got is listener contributions here. We don't have any commercials for Eleuthero root or Reishi mushrooms. No. We don't have any Bose Wave radio ads. And I don't care how good they sound. You could not. No, I would not buy one. Nobody's jumping up and down on a mattress made of foam developed, a Swedish mattress made of foam developed by NASA. It's not happening. We're not picking up bowling balls with vacuum cleaners or contemplating when we are next going to buy gold now. Because this program is not a hustle. This program is not a life support system for sketchy, skeevy advertisements. We don't sell no bucket pudding neither. And, you know, given the fact that it's me, as Steve in New York points out, we don't even have any, you know, bucket yogurt. No, it is simply a matter of listener support, community support, because it's not like I'm the speaker and you're the listener. This is not some sort of holy writ situation. I generally don't say things that I disagree with myself over, but no. It's perfectly okay to disagree without being disagreeable. That having been said, well, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe we would be fabulously, fabulously, comfortably well off, Daffy Duck style, if we did, but we don't. So we find ourselves on this, the penultimate day of June 2017, with $510 to raise to finish the month of June. We pulled up a little short last night, so it looks like we're going to sweat it all the way down to 9 p.m. Friday evening. Which brings me to another topic, program schedule. No, I am not planning on not being here tomorrow. I am planning on being here tomorrow for Friday on the Front Porch. It's one of my favorite days of the week. But I do have an appointment in Charleston tomorrow afternoon. And so, consequently, it is possible that I may miss tomorrow evening. I do not want to. I do not plan to. But it is a possibility that must be accounted for. So, with that in mind, if we could raise the $510 this evening, I would feel much better about tomorrow evening. Further program notes, next week, Thursday and Friday, a week from tonight and a week from tomorrow night, the program will be truncated by an hour. The program will go from 6 to 8 p.m. instead of 6 to 9 because I will be substituting for Mike and Kathy over at the Malloy, over at the Malloy campsite and around the Malloy campfire. So stick around for that. That's true. That's true. The angry Indian points out Adolf Hitler and Rudolf Hess were into patent medicines too. Oh yeah. So no, I won't be peddling any herbal remedies or herbal anythings to make anything grow or expand or no. We're just gonna talk about the issues of the day. And hopefully provide some relief or some comprehension or simply maybe sometimes possibly just even fun, as difficult as that may be to conceive. Given that we are living in the era of Trump. And we will do it with your determined help. So we need 51 people at 10 bucks this evening. If all 51 people at 10 bucks decided to become monthly subscribers, you know what that would do? Let's see, that would be 50... 13, 26, 39. That would be more than, that would be almost 4 days worth of monthly subscriptions. And that would actually take the subscribers we now have and push us up over the happy 100, which we have not reached. So maybe think about that. Check the little box there at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. This is Make This a Recurring Monthly Donation. If we had 51 people do that, we would A, finish June, and B, take a great big bite. Well, we would pass the 25% mark as we move toward our ultimate goal of the fabulous 400. In trying to keep this little broadcast affair afloat. But any way you prefer to do it, we need to raise $510 this evening so that, you know, maybe for the end of 1 month I'm not sweating, hoping that we will finish the month and nudge the Norsky and lick the Lithuanian. Okay? Well, what a lovely idea that is, Brother Deacon Asa. Asa says, you should start pushing specialty ammo and hunting rifles on the program, Bob. And sure, and maybe, what, artisanal arsenic and craft brewed cyanide and... horn-branded ether. How about that? Nah, I guess none of that's going to happen. But still, I don't know. Maybe sometime in the future there'll be a chance to get your hands on some of that nearly one-of-a-kind tangy, hot barbecue slaw. I don't know. Maybe that'll happen somewhere in the future. Maybe, maybe not. So, it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, as I've said for about the fifth time now. And the question is, where do we begin? Which part of the bundle, which part of the crown of thorns do we grab hold on to first? You know, I get up every morning because, you know, I've got to get Ferg down to work. Whether it's, you know, 5 in the morning or 8. And that affords an opportunity to sit and watch morning television via DirecTV Now. That's an unpaid product placement, by the way. And here for the last week or so, Agnes and I sit there with our coffee. Either she goes and gets mine, or I go and get hers. Tastes better that way. Coffee, when it's made with love. And we sit and we watch that little program over on MSNBC. And there's usually something interesting going on. Today it was Rand Paul explaining to the world, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, I'm rich, I'm rich, I'm comfortably well off. He's even got that little tuft on top of his head, the way Daffy Duck has that little tuft of feathers on top of his. It's a living. And he explained today that Medicaid is nothing but Christmas ornaments and gifts. No, really. This seems to be a particularized understanding of our of that portion of our national health insurance matrix that is common mostly to Republicans, but also to some Republican or some Democrats in name only, because later on in the program, we were treated to, and I waited with bated breath, whatever that means. I waited with bated breath to see the appearance of not one, but both of West Virginia's senatorial delegations on that little MSNBC morning zoo crew program. You know, it was interesting. I think it was Willie Geist who even pointed out that they needed a morning zoo crew bell or something. They needed, you know what they needed? They needed a little gizmo with a palette of sound drop effects. You know, things like, or maybe, yeah, or when, well, my particular favorite, right, because that really makes it oh so special. Yeah, you're hearing that because of the Fab Machine, which is now in line, and I've got most of the kinks worked out of. Still going to figure out the whole recording process over, but that's for this weekend. But Agnes and I drink our coffee and watch that little program, and I got to watch, and yeah, maybe it's just because I'm overly sensitive. Yeah, too sensitive. But I got to watch Shelley Moore Capito, West Virginia's junior senator, otherwise known as Arch Moore in a bad wig, because Arch was her daddy, the single most corrupt individual ever to occupy the office of governor in the history of the state of West Virginia, which at 154 years is nothing compared to, say, a Virginia or anything like that, but it's still substantial when you are the most corrupt individual ever to occupy the office in 154 years, which, you know, Archmore was. Well, you know, I'd love to get your legislation through, but I'm going to need a big sack of money and small bills in a little brown paper bag. That's what I'm going to need. Because really, he got that's what he was busted for and convicted, shaking down the coal industry. Well, if anybody deserves to be shaken down. Yeah, at one point in time, he applied to have his law license returned to him, and he said, I want to die a lawyer. And I remember reading that and thinking, we do too, Arch. We do too. We want you to, Arch. And the sooner, the better. Oh, well, he hung on for a while. But anyway, maybe I'm just too sensitive. But Shelley Moore Capito, Arch in a bad wig. Arch was not the most handsome man in the world, let's put it that way. Putting a wig on him don't help. Shelley, in describing her desire to see lots and lots and lots of money and sort of announcing publicly that she is open to be bribed by Mitch McConnell and that $200 or so billion of your money in his pocket, said that she was going to need to see a whole lot more money for opioid interdiction and treatment. And then that West Virginia actually needs the Medicaid that it does get for, and she used this term, again, this is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and it's kind of rough when your morning begins. You know, ow! The term she used was, for our West Virginians. Now, I am a longtime practitioner of the art of word knowing. And the word our is a possessive. When you use the word our, you are indicating possession in the plural of something. And in this case, Shelley Moore was indicating that West Virginians are her possession. There's a legal term for possessions. That legal term in the art of word knowing is our, or chattel. Chattel. Our West Virginians is an indication that male, female, black, white, indigenous, Asian, what have you. West Virginians are chattel belonging to West Virginia's junior senator. In that case, West Virginia's junior senator is not necessarily possessive. That means the junior senator of or from West Virginia. But our West Virginians means that Shelley Moore Capito thinks that she has some sort of chattel fee simple bailment title interest in the beings of people who call themselves West Virginians. And I thought, well, goddamn, I didn't realize the old missus there considered that we were all her the chattel and subjects. But then again, being a Moore, she considers herself a sort of, hillbilly royalty. And the rest of us are villeins and serfs and peasants and peons. And isn't it interesting that we have all those different words to indicate people who are deemed to be less than people who think that they are something noble, that they're noble and entitled to emoluments? Because, of course, the Moore family treated the state and still treats the state of West Virginia like one great big emolument, which, contrary to anything thought by Comrade Kumquat, is not some sort of greasy liquid that you rub on, you know, Russian hookers. Although I'm sure there are greasy liquids that you rub on Russian hookers, and he probably uses the $10,000 an ounce kind because he's classy and special and rich. So it was sort of a bang 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 kind of morning. First we get Rand Paul, who if one cannot say anything about Rand Paul, one can always say, where is it? There it is. Yes. Yeah, you can say any time Rand Paul opens his mouth, this is applicable.
You dick!
Because he is. Jesus. What a jerk. Medicaid is constitutes gifts, you know, like welfare and Christmas ornaments. But the ability of, say, someone laying in a nursing home bed who can't remember her own name and gets lost going down the hall. I'm not making fun, because it's not funny. The idea that that person has something approaching, hopefully, appropriate care because of Christmas ornaments. Christmas ornaments. God almighty. What kind of asshole do you have to be to think of it that way?
You dick!
I could wear that clip out just talking about Rand Paul. And he wants to have 95% unemployment. He wants to have 95% employment, and then that 5%, you know, they can receive the gifts and the Christmas ornaments. But we weren't done. Because, like I said, I stuck around. Agnes and I stuck around because it was going to be a 1-2 punch. Not just Arch in a bad wig, but America's biggest dino, Democrat in name only, Joe Manchin, Senator. The man who sits in the seat formerly occupied by a man with whom it was easy to disagree, Robert C. Byrd, but whom one had to at least grudgingly acknowledge was something of a statesman. A man who once turned down a Supreme Court seat offered by none other than Richard M. Nixon. And sure enough, Joe showed up. And while he did not refer to the people of West Virginia as his personal peons, serfs, villeins, oafs, and other medieval terms. You know, one of the great struggles of the Middle Ages up into the Renaissance was the elimination of serfdom and peonage and villainage. Richard II, King of England toward the end of the 14th century, during Wat Tyler's revolt, went out and as he was a teenager king, he was a teen king, and he went out to negotiate with the members of the peasant revolt and Wat Tyler's rebellion. Made them all sorts of promises, signed them, even. Among other things, eliminating the idea of villainage, from which we get our word villain, meaning a bad actor. The nobility didn't care much for the poors back then. They didn't like the poors any more than Republicans like them now. And then after the revolt was put down, someone asked him, what about his promises with regard to villainage? And Richard II said, "Villains you be, and villains ye shall remain." Happily, Richard II, I don't know whether it was happily or not. It didn't really change things by any appreciable degree. Did not get to live to a ripe old age as king. It is thought now that he was starved to death in the Tower by Henry Bolingbroke, who would become Henry IV.
the Lancaster king. And his son would be Henry V. And all that, once more unto the breaches, dear friends, or with our English dead, blah, blah. And straight out of the Hundred Years' War into the Wars of the Roses. The angry Indian asks, "What about the missing princes?" Huh? Oh, that's a different monarch, and we are not going to spend all that. No. Oh, the little princes. No, that's not. Let us, for God's sake, let us sit upon the ground and tell sad stories of the death of kings. That's my horse, a kingdom for a horse. Different monarch entirely. Different Shakespeare play. But at least Joe didn't do that. No, Joe instead said that he wanted a health care system where Medicaid was concerned, in which West Virginians and others receiving it could display an appropriate degree of
wait for it,
gratitude. Old Joe likes him some forelock tugging. He does. He wants people who receive Medicaid to be grateful and responsible. And given the number of people who are Medicaid recipients in this country who suffer from Alzheimer's disease and really aren't much capable of a whole lot of rationality, I think grateful and responsible is a pretty tall order. But then again, not everybody on Medicaid is an Alzheimer's patient in a nursing home or a long-term care facility. There are people who aren't. And so they need to be doubly, trebly, quadruply grateful and responsible to make up for the irresponsible ingrates, you know, who have Alzheimer's and dementia and are in, you know, the long-term care nursing home facilities. And we think we have no titles of nobility in the United States. Bullshitty, said the robin, and he turned and walked away. Because these are royalist attitudes. The peasants, the peons, the serfs, and the villains need to manifest appropriate degrees of gratitude and responsibility for our kind and generous provision of a place for them to lie down and die. You get the idea that Mr. Spicoli, if there wasn't some goddamned auto-run audio going somewhere on my in amongst the bajillion tabs I've got open, you get the idea he'd get a workout this evening. Rand Paul went so far as to allege that
everybody who receives Medicaid in this country is a layabout who doesn't work and just sits around sucking up all those Medicaid Christmas ornaments and gifts. It kind of is enough to make you understand the revolutionary impulse. But probably the biggest thing out of those political appearances was Shelley Moore Capito stuck in a corner. And it wasn't a gotcha question or anything, but Shelley Moore Capito being unable to say unequivocally that the President of the United States has a clear understanding of the issues in the healthcare debate. Man, she twisted and she wiggled and she squirmed and she said, "Well, I think he understands that there's a healthcare debate, yes. But he's not a details kind of guy. He's more of a big picture guy." It was laughable. All of which apparently got badly under the skin of, the Clementine Caligula. And only two things can obtain here. Either that demented bastard is sitting there in the morning glued to the television watching CNN, Fox and Friends, and Morning Joe all at the same time. Or he's actually got White House staffers whose job it is to watch each program and report back to him if anything unpleasant is said about him while he takes the turn at he watches Fox and Friends, and somebody else has to watch Morning Joe, and somebody else has to watch Good Morning America, and somebody else has to watch whatever it is that CBS runs, and somebody else has to watch you get the idea. And some little toady runs and tattles to him when a discouraging word is heard. And so it is. God damn it. Nothing there. Okay. And he's still allowed to tweet. And let's remember, these are official statements. Official statements of the President of the United States. That have to be complied with under the records-keeping laws and whatnot. And he got real, real mad at Joe and Mika this morning. You know, MSNBC needs to pay me something for all this promotion. in particular, it was a story about Rex on Tillerson, the Secretary of State, who had never had any experience related to foreign policy or diplomacy whatsoever, but instead was just an oil hustler who had worked his way up from the greasy oil fields of Texas to become CEO of ExxonMobil. But apparently he lost his shit at a 30-something White House staffer who was trying to, you know, to tell him what to do. And Joe and Mika, he went off on him. Mika saying that he was that Trump was in fact out of his mind. She said it's just not normal behavior. In fact, there would be concerns that the person who runs the company is out of his mind. Yeah. And went on to say that being concerned about the mental health of the President of the United States is a legitimate concern. She said, is there any precedent in history in the United States of America? Yes, there may be precedent in other countries. That's not a good sign. And when you say in other countries, of course, that now is understood to be a certain sort of code for a certain sort of country in the middle third, say, of the 20th century. And, suffice to say that Comrade Kumquat thereupon loseth his shit. Picking up his phone and beginning to tweet. I heard poorly rated Morning Joe speaks badly of me. Don't watch anymore. Then how come low IQ crazy Mika, along with Psycho Joe, came to Mar-a-Lago 3 nights in a row around New Year's Eve and insisted on joining me? She was bleeding badly from a facelift. I said no. Again with it. Really pisses me off. I said no. That's one of those that's one of those moments where you really do kind of get all 25th Amendment-y. But we've had that conversation. The 25th Amendment, like impeachment, is going nowhere. By the way, a note coming in from note coming from News Ninja Gene, who says, our West Virginians. I stand corrected, Bob. The way I heard that phrase, I thought Shelley was claiming only West Virginians of GOP persuasion, sort of like how any Republican politician talks about what the American peoples want. Well, I guess you could look at it, hear it that way. That makes some sense. But Crazy Mika along with Psycho Joe, you know, this is one of those glass house moments that one's gonna come in almost as handy, I think, as Mr. Spicoli's comment. But that wasn't the end of the tweet.
Then how come low IQ, crazy Mika, long psycho Joe came to Mar-a-Lago 3 nights in a row around New Year's Eve and insisted on joining me? She was bleeding badly from a facelift. I said no.
Well, low IQ, crazy Mika, apparently, I don't know. I think she might win the battle of wits here. I was proud of her. She tweeted back a photo of the back of a Cheerios box showing a baby reaching for a Cheerio on a tabletop with the words on the back of the box, made for little hands. Ooh. How is it? But you know, what's interesting here is there's not, and this is not a defense per se or an apologia, there's not a lot in Mika's life to attack her for. She apparently got pretty good marks at Williams College, which is no slouch as an institution of higher learning. I would dare say one could compare side by side her transcript with, say, Donald Trump's and find out that one of the two made significantly better grades than the other, and, well, hint, it wasn't the guy with the orange complexion. But the fact of the matter is, and we don't need to go into it because it's tawdry and whatever, but there is an issue in Joe Scarborough's past that is and has been fodder for some speculation in regard to his conduct. And, you know, it involves a suspicious death. You know, of a female. A pretty young female who was a member of his congressional staff at the time, and shortly thereafter, he decided that he was going to retire from Congress and spend more time with his family. Did the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini go after that? No, hell no! He went after the woman.
She was bleeding badly from a facelift. I said no.
As Asa points out, do you notice a pattern here, Bob? The filthy pig has a fascination with female TV anchors bleeding from various bodily orifices. This bastard is a next-level special kind of psychopath. Marty says Caligula is definitely looking for his cuckoo's nest to fly over. But I'll take it a step further. Yes, there's some misogyny involved, Asa. There's a hell of a lot of misogyny involved. But more than that, it's this obsession with blood. Do we remember his inaugural address? With every American bleeding. I was one of the few people who picked up on that. Everybody else heard American carnage and went, okay, that's weird. But I saw the phrase, we all bleed. And went, oh, that's just a little twisted. He has an obsession with blood. Yes, there was the Megyn Kelly incident. Now there's the Mika Brzezinski incident. But there is, and he is, in fact, as misogynistic as hell. But there is an overarching obsession with blood. And there is reason to wonder, well, you know, there always is. There's reason to wonder if the guy is becoming completely psychopathically unhinged. Some would say, really, Bob, you're just now getting around to that? No, we've been saying it for a while. But the thing is, as long as those, 35% dead-enders are out there, nothing's going to happen. Oh, and by the way, the statement is, and that's what adds a layer of insanity to this. Mika Brzezinski wasn't bleeding badly from a facelift. Yeah, I don't know if he was, it just walked out of his little toddler playpen room where he was watching Carrie or something. But no, she was not bleeding badly from her face. Now, the whole incident itself, I mean, we talked about it on this program, was subject to criticism because it seemed kind of fawning and skeevy because Mika and Joe had spent the entire 2016 campaign season skeevily fawning over Donald Trump and giving him millions upon hundreds of millions of dollars worth of free publicity in his presidential campaign that other candidates could not have bought. But it's for real. She didn't show up, you know, bleeding badly from a facelift. Blood, you say, says Ron in Raleigh. Bob, there was another guy that seemed to bring up blood a lot in his meanderings. How about a little blood libel while you're at it? This man, Trump, is knucking futs. And I am inclined to agree. And that's just the beginning of how thorny this thorn in the side Thursday is. Hint, really, really, really thorny. And it's not necessarily all Trump. It's not even necessarily all healthcare. I realize I've been talking a lot about healthcare this week, but It's hard to ignore an elephant of that size in the room. Oh, one other thing though, Mika said, you know, if somebody came into NBC and started behaving the way Trump behaves as head of the network, people would think he was nuts, and it would not be okay. Well, that immediately made me think, hey, somebody did come into NBC and start wrecking quite possibly the most successful broadcast lineup they've ever had, bringing in retreads like Fox retreads like Megyn Kelly and Glass-jawed Greta Suster, Van Susteren. Well, news broke today that MSNBC has decided to, according to the press release, decided to part ways with Greta Van Susteren. And she lasted only 6 months at MSNBC, having run for 14 years at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. What does that tell you? Fox News TV Radio Rwanda is just a sort of home for right-wing broadcasters who are otherwise unemployable. Because they're see, at the same time that Greta Van Susteren got axed, they picked up Hugh Hewitt. Mm-hmm. Damning her with faint praise, Phil Griffin, president at MSNBC, said, "Greta is a well-regarded television veteran and one of only a few broadcasters who can say they've hosted shows at all three major cable news networks. We are grateful to her and wish her the best." Meanwhile, Greta simply tweeted, "I'm out at MSNBC." Maybe they got tired of her walking around asking people about their thetans. Who knows? Big Scientologist, Greta. Or maybe her program and her right-wing attitude was just a terrible fit for that time slot on the MSNBC schedule. How can we miss you, Greta, if you won't go away? See, there we go. Randy in PA points out, "I told you that it's not about the ratings. If it were, Mike Malloy would be on top of the heap." Yep. It's about ideology. Clarity says, by the way, Bob, there's no medication for power-hungry narcissism. No, that is an incurable disease. The operative word in power mad is mad. And we have a madman at the helm. Hey, it makes waking up every morning an adventure, doesn't it? Are you like me? Do you wake up the next morning and immediately turn on the TV to find out if we're still here? Because I do that. Anyway, we are at the top of the hour, and I want to send out thanks, profound thanks, to Joseph in Washington State. Thank you, Joseph, for getting us started. Since we're trying to knock out Thursday and Friday today, that takes us, with Joseph's help, we have gone down from $510 to $485. I think we could do this, don't you? That's 48 people. Shucks, we'll just round down the five. I think the Gulfstream 5 hangar is pretty well provisioned right now. 48 people at $10 a piece. And a reminder, it would be huge if 48 people at $10 a piece would become monthly subscribers for this 29th day of June 2017. But any way you want to do it is fine. The mailing address, which I neglected to give out, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV, 25801. Subject line, where to go? Ron in Raleigh asks, hey, Bob, do you think Greta Van Susteren will join you-know-who over at RT? I think she'll go wherever the check clears. But she will not give up her right-wing ideology. This is, and by the way, that would be a good time, as I mentioned, the need to raise $485 this evening. This would be a good time to point out that this program is not funded in any way by any skeevy Russian billionaires, or, for that matter, any sketchy Russian websites that publish stories like, Pope Francis endorses Donald Trump. Nope, no funding whatsoever from those people. We do this together or not at all. So it would be great that we, okay, so we're going to take a break and we got the green news coming up because it's Thursday, Brad and Desi. And let's say by 15 past the hour, you think we could take that down another $100, get it down to 380? Because one way or the other, we got to get it down to the $200 level, or it's going to be Friday on the front porch miracle time. And as gratifying as those can be, yeah, I'm being selfish here, I know. I'd just like to not sweat and fret the end of the month and just get it the hell out of the way. I'm sorry, but I would. So anyway, that's where we are. Courtesy of Michael and Madison, in commemoration of the weirdness of the day, a little something from an album called Facelift by Alice in Chains. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be right back.
It's Thursday, June 29, 2017.
I think it's going to be a landmark breakthrough in coal technology, really around the world, first of its kind.
Or not. Experimental clean coal plant switches to natural gas.
The administration is tearing down the legacies of the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act.
Trump's EPA moves to undo landmark clean water rule. World's first floating wind farm takes shape off the coast of Scotland. Plus,
they haven't seen this in 28 years because we haven't done stupid stuff like this.
Utah lawmaker blames environmentalists for massive forest fire.
All of that inappropriate blame and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics analysis, and snarky comment.
We turn the Forest Service over to the bird and bunny lovers and the tree huggers and the rock lickers. We turned our history over.
Rock lickers? You're not crazy at all, Utah State Rep Mike Noel. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I know you've got some big news on clean coal. This is our key to the future.
Yeah, except not so much. It's been a major setback for proponents of so-called clean coal. The nation's first commercial clean coal plant, the Kemper plant in eastern Mississippi.
I hear about it. It's great.
It was supposed to convert coal to a gas to generate electricity and then capture its carbon pollution. But on Wednesday, Mississippi Power Company announced it will shift the plant to burn natural gas instead. Mississippi utility regulators are cutting them off because the costly experiment was too risky to customers after years of delays, budget overruns, rate hikes, and more than $1 billion in funding from U.S. taxpayers.
So this is it? This is our clean coal technology, the future of coal that we've been promised for so long?
That's right.
And now it's shut down and they're just using natural gas instead.
Yeah.
So fitting.
The Trump administration this week officially kicked off the process of repealing President Obama's Clean Water Rule, a landmark regulation that clarified EPA authority to allow it to regulate how much pollution could be dumped in wetlands and tributaries that feed into the drinking water supply of one-third of Americans. The Waters of the United States rule has been on hold due to litigation from a coalition of fossil fuel industry groups, manufacturers, agriculture industry groups, and developers who argue the rule violates their property rights. EPA will now withdraw and rewrite the rule.
Well, who needs clean water anyway?
And it's not the first rule that the Trump EPA has withdrawn or postponed. Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt has stalled safety regulations for hazardous chemicals established in response to that deadly fertilizer explosion in West Texas. Mm. He's pulled back regulations curbing methane emissions from oil and gas drilling that cause air pollution and contribute to global warming. He's also withdrawn more pesticides rules that were intended to limit exposure impacts to children and farm workers.
Somebody ought to hold an election.
And the Associated Press reports this week that EPA's Pruitt met with the CEO of Dow Chemical, the maker of the widely used pesticide chlorpyrifos, just days before Pruitt decided to withdraw a ban on that pesticide.
Total coincidence.
EPA's own scientists said the pesticide damages the brains of children, even in tiny amounts. The pesticide isn't up for a reassessment again until 2022. In Utah, a state lawmaker blamed conservationists for a wildfire that has burned more than 77 square miles near the Bryan Head Ski Resort in the Dixie National Forest in southern Utah. Utah Republican State Representative Mike Noel used the fire as an opportunity to call for more commercial logging in national forests.
We turn the Forest Service over to the bird and bunny lovers and the tree huggers and the rock lickers. We turned our history over, and the fire is going to do more damage because we're going to lose our watershed, we're going to lose our soils, we're going to lose our wildlife, and we're going to lose our scenery, the very thing you people wanted to try to protect. It's just plain stupidity.
Yeah, you people and your stupidity. So does he have a point? Do we have all of this dead wood up there that should have been logged by the logging companies?
Well, forest ecologists say that while a century of forest fire suppression policy has indeed contributed to the increase in large forest fires, they also say that increased logging of those trees killed by the bark beetle epidemic would not have made a difference in this fire. Finally, some good news. A new frontier opened up in wind energy this week. Norway's state-owned oil and gas company launched the world's first floating wind farm off the coast of Scotland. Set to be fully operational next year, the Hywind project uses pioneering technology to anchor the turbines to the seabed and keep them upright, and could vastly expand the number of suitable areas that can be tapped for offshore wind farms. And also notable because it's an oil company behind the project.
Clean coal plants going to natural gas, oil companies moving to wind, dogs and cats living together. What kind of madness is this? Well, we'll find out in our next thrilling episode. Until then, we'll be off for a week over the holiday. I hope that you and yours have a safe and happy one. Don't forget, you can get more on all of our stories at greennews.bradblog.com. And you can find, follow, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I've been called a tree hugger from time to time, but I'm dipped if I've ever been called a rock licker. Well, I hate to disappoint him. I guess I'm going to have to go out and lick some rocks now. I can't imagine it's going to be all that flavorful, but I hate to disappoint. It is 13 minutes past the hour on this 29th day of June as we run downhill toward the end of the month, and hopefully Norsky nudging and Lithuanian licking in addition to the rocks. I've got thanks to send out. Thank you very kindly to Kay and to Charlene. We are down to $410 to go in fundraising for the evening, and we have a brand new challenge on the table courtesy of Ralphs. Thank you, Ralphs. The next $25 that roll in get doubled courtesy of Ralphs. So your 25 becomes 50, your 10, 25, 10, et cetera, up to $25. And that would get us down below the $410 mark and get us moving toward at least wiping out the overage in tonight's fundraising goal. And can we maybe meet Ralph's challenge, say, in the next 16 minutes or so? By the halfway point of the program, that would be awfully helpful if we could. I love the fact that you guys hear things that I don't necessarily hear. Clarity just got rock liquor, Jägermeister. Well, I guess it kind of is now, isn't it? Jägermeister. Oh. That's just a little terrifying. Headache, great big nauseating headache in a bottle, that Jägermeister. Let's run over to the Skype line and see what Scott in San Diego is about this evening. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. Jägermeister, I think I've had it once, and it kind of reminded me of NyQuil, in its effect and also its flavor.
Well, if you mix it with a little bit of club soda over ice, it has kind of a root beer quality to it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, what is that? Jägermeister, German. That would be Hunter Master.
Yeah, I think that is the translation.
Master Hunter.
Yeah. Speaking of Kool-Aid, are you old enough to remember root beer Kool-Aid?
Sadly, yes. That was one of those things that just didn't work out.
Well, maybe my taste buds were strangely affected by premature birth or some other malady, but I liked it. I mean, it was flatter than the Flat Earth Society thinks
flatter
the Earth
than piss
is.
On a plate, yes.
Yeah, but I liked it, and I have no explanation.
Well, I recently saw something. Somebody on Facebook said it's always an adventure seeing what failed attempts at marketing show up at your local dollar store. And accompanying the post was a photograph of a great slew of boxes of root beer flavored Pop-Tarts.
Oh, God. Now that I don't think I could go for.
Apparently, the test market did not work out.
Yeah, I mean, I used to like the cinnamon-flavored Pop-Tarts, the sugar cinnamon filling, but that was my extent of appreciation of Pop-Tarts. You could suffer third-degree burns if you didn't wait a few moments to pull them out of the toaster.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. and if you used oven mitts, the icing would stick to the oven mitts. So it was just a no-win situation all the way around.
Yeah, that's...
But I've got a question. It's a technical question. But in addition, linked up with the question, I've got a fond memory of a radio talent that when you hear his name, most people won't immediately associate this person with radio. But in recent years, I've listened to some of his air checks back from the 50s and into the 60s when he was a powerhouse at the CBS flagship station in Los Angeles, the mighty KNX radio. And it's a sad memory, a sad anniversary. It's 39 years ago today that drummer, actor, and radio giant Bob Crane was murdered in Scottsdale, Arizona. And that murder is still technically...
That was just weird, yeah.
Yes, yes, it was very much weird. And unfortunately, when it comes to Bob Crane, most people today who remember him at all know him, obviously, from Hogan's Heroes. Maybe some know him from the Donna Reed Show, which preceded Hogan's Heroes. Some might even know that he was a damn good drummer. But more than a few people don't realize that he was an amazing radio talent in the 50s and 60s.
That was his beginning, yes.
And that leads me to your question, to my question, to you, your technical question. You had a few drop-ins today, audio wild tracks that I had never heard, and I was wondering where they come from. Do you generate them from a sound box, or what do you do?
Yeah, there's a gizmo.
Okay, and it's got like maybe two dozen buttons and...
It's virtual.
Yeah, okay.
And it's got a whole bunch of little places where you can tuck stuff in. And eventually I'll have all my other drops in there as well, you know, like Mr.
Yeah.
Spicoli. And, yeah.
Yeah, I've never worked with one, but I've seen them before. Back before digital technology for that kind of content, it was all done on...
Cards.
You've seen... Yeah, and some people who don't know the inside tech aspects of radio, if you've seen an 8-track tape, you have a good idea of what a continuous loop tape cartridge is that they used to use in radio. It was a similar design, and it would have anywhere from 30 seconds worth of tape up to, I've seen them go as much as 10 minutes.
I saw them go as low as 10.
Yeah.
10 seconds.
I'm sure they had those for jingles. But anyway, these were continuous loop, self-contained audio tape cartridges that you would shove them into a machine, hit a button, they would play, and then when the tape completely came around to the beginning, it had a little piece of foil with an impulse that would stop the cart so it would be ready to play for next time.
Right.
Well, that technology didn't really come in until the late 50s, and it didn't really catch on with most stations until into the early 60s. But before that, everything was done on a disc, like a vinyl record.
Or with a little box of gizmos and doodads.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like this.
Yeah, yeah, or a bicycle horn, or a... yeah. Okay, you know, but one of the things that made Bob Crane an amazing radio talent when he did mornings on KNX Los Angeles from 56 until I think I think he left the radio gig after about 9 years to devote strictly to television. But even back when he was doing local radio in Connecticut, he had the owner of the station was an unusual owner in that he would ask the people who were actually on the air at the station, the disc jockeys, what he could do to make the design and the layout of the studio more user-friendly. Now, how rare is that? Okay? That's like unheard of. But Bob said, is there any way you can devise a system where I can play my drop-ins, again, from records? Yeah, I used to keep hundreds of records in the studio, like comedy records and old transcriptions of radio shows. And somehow he knew exactly where the pertinent little chunk of audio was on each one of those many, many records. So the engineers in Connecticut devised a system where he could operate this thing, like make it live out onto the air with his feet, of all things. It was under the console, and he would use his feet, you know, he would cue it up with a headphone while talking on the air, and once it was at the right spot, he would hit another switch on the floor with his foot, and that would make it live and out over the air, up the tower, and all of that. Well, when he got to Los Angeles in 56, it was a very strong union town. In other words, you had a disc jockey or an announcer on one side of the glass with no equipment at all, maybe a cough switch, okay? And on the other side of the glass, you had a union engineer, NABIT, usually, who had a couple of turntables and a couple of cart machines, and he would run all the technical ends of the program. Well, Bob Crane had to get a waiver from the engineers' union so that he would be able to, in effect, run that portion of his audio output. But if you ever get a chance, go to YouTube and Google in Bob Crane KNX 8th Anniversary, and you'll get a good idea, like a primer, on just what an amazing talent this guy was. And they say that you couldn't touch him as far as the competing stations. He owned the morning shift in all of Southern California. So just a moment to remember Bob Crane, who was a hell of a talent, and despite whatever failings he had as a human being, you know, he's somebody that exemplifies really inventive radio to me. So that was my little plug for him.
Well, I never would have known it had you not mentioned it.
Yeah, well, I tell you, if you ever have a chance, like if you're not doing the ongoing battle of the weeds on Bob's little acre, you know, sit down and find it's like, all told, it's an air check from past programs that they played on his 8th anniversary at the station. And it's a compilation of just what it was that he had done up to that point. And it'll blow you away. I mean, and KNX, at some stations that he would apply to get work, they couldn't figure out how he did it. Like, did he plot all of it out in advance? Well, there's no way you can do it. He had that, whatever it was in his head and his abilities, that you could do it on the fly and instantaneously. It's almost as if there would be no way that he could cue an engineer on the other side of the glass to do what needed to be done quickly enough to get the impact.
Well,
that
kind of stuff really is difficult to do on the fly, and anybody who can has a certain genius for it.
Oh, it's an innate talent that very, very few people have.
But God Almighty, I mean, his death was sordid enough. And then, lo and behold, back around 2001, his son tried to make money off of it with a paywall website that included outtakes of Crane's sex films.
Yeah, I remember reading about that.
Jesus.
Well, there's also an effort underway for him to be nominated for inclusion in the Radio Hall of Fame. And I don't know how successful that'll ultimately be, you know, due to the sordid nature of some of his off-air activities, and also the fact that he wasn't really well known outside of Los Angeles or New England for radio work. But I'm telling you, if anybody qualifies to be in the Radio Hall of Fame, I would think that Bob Crane is. And there's a book that was written a couple of years ago called Bob Crane, The Definitive Biography, which I hope to read one of these days. And there's a website, what is it called? I think it's called Vote Number 4 Bob Crane. It's a group, a page on YouTube that will show you, and even a website otherwise, that will show you how to let the Hall of Fame know that as a human being and a talent, the rest of us could let them know that he's worthy of consideration and inclusion.
Well, brushes with greatness. I just saw in the chat room, I saw VT Blom say, I remember Bob Crane from WICC in Bridgeport, Connecticut, at which point I immediately received an email from Darlene in Connecticut, who said, apparently Bob Crane was a cousin of mine, according to my mother. She was quite insistent on this. I never met him. But, you know, brushes with greatness. So yeah, it all starts in Connecticut, and then, of course, the sinful, hedonistic ways of Hollywood brought him low.
Well, and he kind of hit on hard times after Hogan's Heroes ended, in the sense that I think he had another very, very brief situation comedy, and he could have done late night television in the mold of Johnny Carson. If the powers that be had chosen him to do that, he would have been just an, because also on this KNX air check on the 8th anniversary, there's a lot of his last hour of the show from 9 to 10, 6 days a week, was usually an in-studio guest of some prominence, usually in the entertainment field. And he was a fun interviewer on top of being a hell of a disc jockey. You know, so it would have been a natural for him to do, well, hell, even a game show. You know, like Richard Dawson was the original host of Family Feud. And Dawson was perfect for that show because he was just sweet enough, but he was also just nasty enough, you know, to inject humor and fun into a quiz show, a game show.
Well, didn't he do a guest shot on the Love Boat?
Yeah, I think he did a couple of them. But the thing about it was, he was in Arizona, you know, where he was killed, simply because the TV opportunities hadn't presented themselves by the time Hogan's Heroes went off. I think it had like a 9 or 10 year run. So that would have brought him up to like the early 70s. So he was scrambling for work, basically, and ended up getting into the dinner theater circuit. And there was I forget the name of the show. I think it was called Beginner's Luck. And I'm going strictly by memory on that. But that's why he found himself in Scottsdale, Arizona, staying in a condo or an apartment that they made available to the rotating cast members who came in for these different shows at you know, the local dinner theater there. But I've done a little bit of research into it, and there was a guy whose name I forget who went on trial for the murder like 10 years
Carpenter
or more
Carpenter
afterwards.
Was his name. Carpenter.
Yeah, John Carpenter. John Carpenter was his name. And he was an audio salesman and video salesman mostly, in Los Angeles back at the very dawn of home video. And this was even before video cassettes like Betamax or VHFs. before that, if you had enough money and enough, if you were in the know, you knew the right people, you could get a Sony video recorder for home use that was reel to reel, if you can believe that. I think they were little 6 or 7 inch or 5 inch reels of tape, maybe an inch wide, you know, primitive by today's standards, but that was cutting edge technology then, and cameras, you know, the size of a shoebox, you know, which yeah. in today's world, cameras fit on your lapel.
Yeah, well, that's true. But I will warrant, I will just guess that that's not really why you called.
Well, that kind of is a big reason. I wanted to find out how you generated the audio, and I happen to recall that, you know, that information about Bob Crane, not only the anniversary of his death, but also the wizardry that he displayed in his radio work with the drop-ins and the wild tracks and stuff. Yeah, if we were to take it back to real life and political stuff, all of this nonsense on the part of the right wingers who claim that their, you know, health care and Medicare and Medicaid are nothing more than a gift, and you must be quite deserving and compliant and you know, grovel enough in order to receive it. As I recall, up until I got sick and became disabled, I worked. Well, all of it happened really in my mid to late 30s. And I'm just turned 63. So, and I worked from pretty much age 18 officially, right on up until when I couldn't anymore, and even made a couple of forays into getting back into the workforce without success. But my understanding during all of that time and with all of those jobs was I will work at an agreed-upon salary, and some of that money will be taken out to go for city, state, and federal taxes, and another chunk will go toward FICA, that is to say Social Security, with the clear understanding that when I reach retirement age, there will be a little nest egg for me, or if I become unable to work prior to that retirement occurring, there'll be a safety net. And I gladly paid into the program with that understanding. Okay? Well, somehow, the people on the other end of the conversation have had a cosmic shift of magnificent proportions on their understanding of how the arrangement works. Now it's a gift. Now you must be completely deserving and subservient. Which prompts me to ask the question, what the hell is this shit? You know? And it just blows my mind.
But see, that is not an unreasonable understanding of the status quo.
Yeah.
The problem is your understanding, Scott, does not jibe with the understanding of practitioners and advocates and devotees and acolytes of predatory anarcho-Randian capitalism.
Yeah.
Because to them, I mean, and you can draw a parallel to, say, the military. They love the military as long as they're going and fighting their nasty goddamn wars for oil, okay? Now, they don't love them enough to maybe send them into the war with, you know, say, appropriate materials and necessarily, you know, say, armored vehicles and so forth. You remember how it was just raining pieces of soldiers and Marines and unarmored Humvees in the early days of the IED. They love them as long as they are useful to them. Once they have outlived their usefulness, however, they become a drag to them. That's why veterans, especially the disabled variety, have such a goddamn hard time getting anything resembling the care which was promised to them.
Yeah.
Well, the same thing applies in the in the anarcho-Randian unhinged capitalism universe. You are only useful to a Republican as long as you can produce and do them some, or their masters, some level of economic good.
Yeah, well, I was going to mention the other part of the equation is they love the military as long as it's useful, but they further love the military only if it's economically advantageous to the politicians and to the politicians' corporate masters. Case in point, after things settled down, relatively speaking, in Iraq, time was there would be military construction people, Corps of Engineers or whoever, Seabees in the Navy, who would build housing and quarters and a PX or a BX, whichever, at a military area, okay? And they would have sleeping quarters and showering quarters. Well, now, even such mundane things as cooking the meals for the military, construction and cooking and all of the support stuff.
Oh, the $30 Halliburger.
Oh, yes. Well, not only that, but the fact that you should have a reasonable expectation if you're in the military in a place that has been built for you in as a home base in a conflict area. You should have some reasonable expectation that after a long, hard day of being on duty, you can strip down, get into the shower, and not be electrocuted. I mean, the reasonable
right, or
man,
not be served rotten meat and filthy vegetables and right, sure,
yeah. So
or maybe if you're having a war in the middle of the desert, be able to provide say 11 liters of drinking water to every soldier every day, which you know they need, and
yeah.
it didn't get. In Iraq.
So when both of us probably hear all of this Republican mouth music about how much we love the military, that rings automatically false because it flies in the face of reality. They're real good with the mouth music, but when it comes to actually backing it up with any, you know, obvious support, well, that's nowhere to be found.
No, and to sort of bring this back home, it's you know this idea, and it's not limited to Republicans; it's also Democrats in name only, like Joe Manchin.
Yeah,
the idea that somebody needs to be bowing and scraping and tugging their—I mean, does he really want the hem of his garment kissed by an Alzheimer's patient, or because they need to be responsible and grateful for what we're giving them? I mean, that made me sick this morning, Scott.
Yeah, and rightfully so, because...
thank you, my lord. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm not sure who you are, but thank you for providing the necessary means for me to be warehoused through my golden years.
Yeah, and there, other than the chronological age of those poor souls, there's not a whole lot of golden happening in their golden years, if you get my meaning. And again, it's like I had a conversation online the other day with someone about there's a mentality inside the Capitol Beltway, the big highway that surrounds Washington, D.C. And it's like I grew up within the confines of the Beltway and spent my first 28 years in the D.C. area, so I have a fairly good understanding of how it works. There's like massive blinders on with the people who inhabit that place and call all the shots. They have absolutely no appreciation for what life is like, for the rest of us. And those who did have an appreciation of it found that once they got to Washington and got elected and kept getting reelected, they found that the goddamn money at the sugar tit of corporate America was too damn good to make much noise or make many waves. That's my take on it anyway. And until we start getting clear on the exact nature and design of how it's all set up, I predict it's only going to get worse. And this healthcare thing, this Trump care thing, is an incredible travesty. And then Mitch McConnell adds a few little tiny cat turds onto the shit Sunday that the House of Representatives came up with under
cat
the guise
turd sprinkles. And 7:42 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and we're back in the gutter. Go ahead.
But this whole Trump care thing is like, come on, people. It reminds me, and I posted this the other day on my Facebook. I don't know if you saw it, but the whole thing reminds me of the Paris peace talks to end the war in Vietnam, which began in May of 68, okay? Well, the first good bit was taken up by an ongoing argument slash discussion about what the shape of the goddamn table was going to be that they would be negotiating around and who got to sit at it, okay? And that was kind of an interesting thing. And it, as I recall, it took until 73 for an accord, a peace agreement, to finally be arrived at that everybody was able to sign, okay? So, you know, I'm afraid that the conversation as it stands in this country on healthcare is going to be not unlike the Paris peace accords. And at this stage, after 10 years of arguing about the nature and design of the American healthcare system, as far as to whom and exactly how such services and coverage is delivered or are delivered, we are pretty much still we spent the last 10 years arguing about the shape of the table. So I don't have a lot of
it's a multifaceted problem too. And I think I'm one for understanding origins. And part of it has to do with the idea that people are, and it's promulgated by right-wing think tanks and the lot. Mike in Cascadia just sent me a note and said, right-wing sponsored Charles Murray, and he is an odious soul, with his book Losing Ground, changed the argument. Previous to his book, the public common wisdom was social welfare was there due to the deficiencies of society. Murray's book contended that people got to where they needed social welfare due to their own individual deficiencies. The right wing pumped this idea out where to the point now that it is the public conventional wisdom that you are somehow deficient if at any point in time you have needed public support in order to continue living.
Now, Charles Murray is the bell curve guy.
Yeah, racist to the goddamn core.
Yeah. See, when you first said Murray,
black people and Latinos can never be as smart as white people because they're not white people. Right.
Yeah.
That guy.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's definitely who we want telling us what the situation is, you know, because that's already a lot of his stuff has already been on multiple levels disproven by actual reality, as I recall. I mean, I could be wrong. I so rarely am, but anyway, I just don't know. Am I off base with any of my understandings here on any of the shit that I've talked about today?
No, I don't think so. And but let's also understand that Medicaid is not welfare.
No, it's not. It's part of an insurance program for people who need it.
And frankly, I thought, you know, it's not a bad thing because, one, the poverty level is maintained at an artificially low number, all right?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's put it this way. a guy who makes $10 an hour and works full time, even with the Medicaid expansion, a single male working full time, 40 hours a week, call it 38 hours a week, $380 a week. That person cannot qualify for the Medicaid expansion, which is at 137% of the poverty line.
Yeah.
Okay, do you find that as, because $10 and I, remember, the minimum wage has lost purchasing power to a shocking degree over the course of a generation.
Yeah, exactly.
That $10 an hour now is not the $3.35 an hour I got for spinning the Chuck Wagon Gang singing Kick Me Through the Goalpost God.
No, and you ask me if I get that. Yeah, I'm a living example of the madness, Bob, because once again, and I've told you this story before, it's gotten to be an almost annual ritual here of dealing with the question, who gets to pay the Part B Medicare premium, me or the state of California? And it's happened again. This is like the third time it's happened. What happens is I fill out the paperwork. They say I'm qualified because I'm paying the premium. It drops my income down to the point where the state will start paying for it. And then once they start paying for it, after a number of months,
they credit you with an increase in income and quit paying for it.
Bingo. You win any of the lovely stuffed animals on the two top shelf.
Yeah, see, I mean, I remember, years ago, you know, because, you know, I'm not an elderly recipient of Social Security, so I didn't know these things at the time. But if you get, for instance, and this is all Republican policy, okay? If you get a cost of living increase,
yeah,
on your Social Security, your food stamp allotment will be reduced by the same amount.
Oh, yes, yes.
Because, by God, citizen, you now have more purchasing power in the capitalist miracle that is Merca. The greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, forever, in the universe, under God.
Well, the question then becomes, as someone who is on Social Security, I forget exactly what the percentage of the COLA was this year, the cost of living, but I think it came out to a couple of bucks a month. You know, then I get to decide where I'm going to be spending that tidy sum, you know? And this is not to complain, but it should also be pointed out that this annual ritual of who gets to pay the Medicare Part B premium, okay, is, how do I put this without falling over dead from being outraged? It's just crazy, because you talk about government waste, fraud, and abuse. When they cut me off from the state paying the premium, okay, that means I've got to pay it, which means I get hit with an economic disadvantage, and I'm already disadvantaged economically simply by the amount that I get from Social Security. It's enough to live on.
Whatever, but throughout all of this, there runs this thread, Scott, that you and I mean, I'm not criticizing you. This isn't like a character flaw or anything. You fail to understand the mindset of the right wing. The only reason you're in the spot you're in is because you didn't work hard enough and you didn't worship God well enough for God to turn around and make you rich.
Yeah, but at the
time, it's your fault. This is all your fault. I mean, you probably had, you know, granted, the president of the United States can have a standing rule that everybody else gets one scoop of ice cream, but God damn it, he gets two.
Yeah.
But somewhere along the way, you probably had an extra scoop of ice cream and that contributed to your bad cholesterol numbers. It you did it to yourself, Scott.
I know. I mean, that's the bullshit that they are shoveling out there. But let's hold them accountable. I mean, there's I'm not the only one who misunderstands, if misunderstanding is the issue. They seem to misunderstand that on the one hand, they're talking about fraud and waste and abuse, okay, and they're wanting to cut pennies everywhere they possibly can. However, where I was going with this, at the moment when I get cut off from the state paying the Part B premium, and then I pay it, and then I go through the flaming hoops of all the paperwork to be reinstated, at least temporarily, you talk about clerks and people and support staff and A to Z, the people on the state and county level who have to work it out so that I get reinstated. How much is that costing? I would venture to guess it's way, 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 way more than what the state would pay every month by paying my Part B premium.
Well, see, you're contributing to the economy. You're not a layabout after all.
Oh, yeah, but what do they think I'm doing with this tidy sum that I get every month from Social Security? I'm not playing bingo at the Indian Reservation or pulling the slot machines. I don't have a fancy car. Hell, I don't have a car at all. I qualify for an $18 a month bus and trolley pass. Otherwise, I would be a shut-in, homebound, you know. And I'm not complaining. I'm grateful for any assistance that I get. But what pisses the hell out of me is the fact that I am not trying to do anything.
And let me guess, you've got a Republican congressman down there, right?
No. I'm fortunate enough to have two U.S. senators who are Democrats and a House of Representative member. And believe it or not, the one Republican who does represent me on the county level, on the San Diego County Board of Supervisors, the guy who has that seat for my district, is a guy who happens to be a Republican. And I'll contact him again to help expedite the thing about me getting reinstated to the California Medicaid program or Medicaid program.
Medi-Cal.
God,
I'm in West Virginia and I know it's Medi-Cal, Scott.
Yeah. And then I guess the last.
I wish to hell I had it.
The last point to make here in this overall conversation is the fact that I am in California, a blue state, a state that knows that the government on the state level and even the county and even the city have a responsibility to assist people who are in dire need or even moderate need of assistance. They are responsible. It is a responsible government here on all levels for the most part, at least where I live in San Diego. So if I'm getting this sort of problem, God knows what folks in West Virginia and Kentucky and Indiana and Ohio and points south are having to deal with, because those people are it's a wonder they can talk at all, because their lips are locked on the great corporate sugar tit and special interest sugar tit. And if people aren't pissed off, then they need to have their pulse checked and make sure their pupils aren't fixed and dilated, because it's what's going on, folks. And if it's happening to me here, you can damn well bet that if it's not happening to you now where you live, it will be soon, or could be, especially with that demented circus peanut that's posing as president there at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Well, I'm overwrought, Bob. I better just shut up now before I fall over.
You're telling a story that is identical probably to God knows how many millions of Californians and Americans generally. It's kind of like voting. If you really think that voting is important, you try to make it possible for everybody to vote who is legally entitled to do so, not try to keep people from voting in the name of keeping one or two people who can't vote from voting. The same thing applies to what you're describing here. The bottom line is, it ain't going to break anybody if it turns out that you're 2 cents over the fucking line on the Medicare Part B premium. All right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That we're not going to go into the Great Depression over Scott's 2 cents worth. Oh, but well, if you add those 2 cents up by 2 million people, do you know what 4 million pennies are?
Pretty damn heavy.
I'd like to deposit this. I've got $40,000 in pennies. One, two,
but no, even God. But it all stems from this idea that if we can't just, give them 40 lashes or a proper caning or something, we can at least make the economically and culinarily insecure, we can make them suffer a little bit so that, to go back to Joe fucking Manchin, they will be grateful and responsible with our money. And as odious as that is, I've got another example that's worse by far that maybe I'll get into here in a few minutes. Because the level of just plain growling, shitty meanness that forms the dark and bitter carbon core of the Republican heart is almost impossible to express. Oh, well, you know, God damn it. Yeah, look, it's Louis Gohmert all over again. I receive correspondence from my constituents who say I was there in the food bonanza the other day, and I was waiting to check out, and this Negro lady with 92 children was in front of me, and she had her EBT food stamp card and a basket plumb full of Alaska king crab legs. And I don't eat king crab legs. I was standing there with my beans and my rice and my hamburger and a big bag of dried toenail clippings that we was going to have for dinner, because I work for a living every day representing Gohmert. I work for a living, and I resent it. And you just look at that and you go, well, God damn. Look at us.
Well, I'll close on this observation or insight. I am far from being the brightest crayon in the box, okay? But if someone with my background and education and understanding can get a clear picture of the nature of what's going on, there's no reason that they can't, they being the other side. And the fact that they apparently don't, you can only chalk up to willful ignorance or blindness on their part. And until that changes, I don't have a lot of hope for things getting any better. I mean, I know I'm the relentless optimist in the crowd, but sometimes you look at this and you just have to shake your head and say, Jesus, you know, are we going to make it through this one? We've made it through a lot of them, but boy, this one's a tough one.
Well, and from the looks of things, the Republicans are not about to change. And let's remember, if they have anybody, say, in a nursing home or needing to eat food or income support, let's remember, those people deserve it. Okay, so they're, you know, only because there is some sort of a personal relationship. But generally speaking, nobody does, because it's all just an indication of laziness. And somewhere in here, there's also a conversation about, and I don't know how to put this without sounding like a complete asshole. I dare say, if you could take those hundreds of thousands of people being supported by Medicaid in nursing homes with Alzheimer's or dementia. And if you could get them coherent, you know, for 30 minutes and say, you know, look, you're 99 and you've been here for 20 years. I have. You have. And you haven't known a minute of it. Back when you were 50, if I told you that this was how it was going to end, what would you have done? Because, you know, to quote Shakespeare, to Hamlet in particular, there's the rub that makes calamity of such long life.
Mm-hmm.
And while we have fantastic, bizarre drugs that are advertised every day all over television that will keep your nose from sliding right off, although ask your doctor before you take it because it may make your it may make your liver quiver and give you cancer of the tuberculosis. We haven't solved the basic problem, and that is we have extended life, but not necessarily quality of life.
Yeah.
As far back as recently as the early part of the last century, average lifespan in this country was pitifully low, you know, 45, 50. And so we figured out a way to make people live longer, but not live better. And that's, you know, that's kind of on, that kind of falls on capitalized science. And I don't know necessarily what I'm pointing toward or talking about. But everybody wants to live their lives. And then at the end, I mean, are we inured to this idea that we're all just going to wind up warehoused? It barring some sort of interventional disease process or sudden demise. How many people think about that, Scott?
Well, I looking back, and maybe it's the only way that you can really get an accurate picture of what you should have been paying attention to 30 or 35 years ago. Looking back, you can see the critical turning points. And to me, the two critical turning points were in 80 when Ronald Wilson Reagan was elected. And the other critical turning point was 94 when the Republicans took over the House of Representatives and brought in that asshat Newt Gingrich as eventually as Speaker. And that's when the clown cars got, you know, parking spaces with their names on them. On Capitol Hill and elsewhere. And then the rise of lobbyists and influence and corporate lawyers and influence peddlers and fucking corporations with a vested interest actually writing major pieces of legislation that affected their well-being and bottom line. And I call bullshit on that. But those, to me, are the two critical points, turning points in recent American history, where we zigged when we sure as hell should have zagged. And, you know, then you have 8 years of George W. Bush and all the good that has done us with Afghanistan and Iraq. And it's like, are people that preoccupied and or stupid that they don't see what the hell's going on? Especially those people who think that, well, given all of these problems, Donald J. Trump is the fucking answer. Well, what kind of imbecile do you have to be on even his best day or your best day? Would you people think that given the problems, he's the solution? He doesn't answer any questions. unless you're asking the question, how misinformed or stupid can people possibly be? And then Donald Trump is obviously the answer, or at least the response to that question.
Exactly. Well, Scott, you know? I'm gonna hit it here. I've enjoyed our conversation, and we'll talk soon. Okay.
Okay, Bob. Check out those Bob Crane air checks. I think you'll be delighted.
Oh, I will. I will. I'm looking forward to it. You have a good one now.
All right. Take care, Bob.
Bye. Our buddy Scott calling from Sandy Ego, as he spells it, S-A-N-D-Y-E-G-G-O. It's about 7 minutes past the hour. I want to thank Liz. Thank you, Liz, very kindly for responding to Ralph's challenge. We now have only $400 to go and only $15 to go in Ralph's challenge. And we've got, 55 minutes and change or so to knock down, oh my God, $400 in fundraising. Is that doable? 40 people at $10 out of a rather sizable listening audience. And like I said, I don't plan to be gone tomorrow, but it's possible I will be. You got an appointment in Charleston in the afternoon, and you think, well, I'll be in and out of there, and then, you know, it's 5 o'clock, and you're going, I'm screwed. Because, you know, by the time you factor in parking and everything and getting in and out of town, traffic, whatever, it's about an hour and a half trip down and an hour and a half trip back. It's only 50 miles. But it's 50 miles of winding road and speed traps. So there's that. A lot of doors opened within what Scott was talking about, and indeed other doors in terms of what I had planned for the evening anyway. I don't want to let the business with Comrade Kumquat's tweets completely wipe out the rest of the evening, but Jesus, it's a little... it's not surprising. The people leaping to his defense. Orrin Hatch, who likes to wax all... heartbroken over the lack of civility and tone. Not a fan of today's POTUS missives, but he's okay with Trump's tweeting habit overall, it was reported. He said every once in a while you get a dipsy doodle. A dipsy doodle. Yeah, that's what a misogynistic attack on a woman in this country is called in conservative, God-fearing, upstanding, Moroni-worshipping, whatever, America. It's a dipsy doodle. Lindsey Graham peeked out from under the fainting couch down there at the ancestral family estate of Smoldering Chode and said, Mr. President, your tweet was beneath the office and represents what is wrong with American politics, not the greatness of America. Yeah, okay, great, Lindsey. Good for you. Somebody pass him a hanky. But the fact of the matter is that that doesn't matter a hill of beans. What does matter, is the fact that the President of the United States is barking mad. We are in the midst of a constitutional crisis, the likes of which this country has never seen. And the Lindsey Grahams of the world, and the Ben Sassys of the world, and the Susan Collinses of the world, and the James Lankfords of the world, and the Lisa Murkowskis of the world, those are all senators, and the Paul Ryans of the world, and every member of the Republican caucus in the House are not willing to do a goddamn thing about it. Nothing. Asa points out, well, if the pig-eyed right-wingers hadn't eliminated government funding for genetic research as far back as the Clinton era, I would argue that we could have had longer lives of better quality by now. Yeah, it's very likely. But, so, we've got this civility thing we're talking about. Remember how we were supposed to tone it down after Klan sympathizer Steve Scalise got shot a couple of weeks back? Because it was all our fault, because over here on the so-called left. Ha! What left? Yeah, we're supposed to tone it down. Well, sauce for the goose is not sauce for the gander. Oh, by the way, like I said, $15 remain on Ralph's challenge, which, if met, will take us down to $360 to go. And Mike in Cascadia has offered another $25 challenge that will take us down, if met, to $310. Which is still better than 500 by a long shot, but, you know, we need to get there. So please don't leave these challenges lying on the table. Please. And I really want us to, you know, nudge the Norsky and lick the Lithuanian. Please. No, the tone is our problem, not the right wing's. Do you know who Dana Loesch is? She's got some wingnut welfare radio show. She is described as a conservative media personality, and she's also an official spokescreep for the National Republican Rifle Association. I warn you that what you are about to hear is disgusting and obnoxious and even frightening. The journalist and author Jeff Charlotte described what you're about to hear as barely a whisper shy of a call for full civil war. This was premiered back in April at the NRA Clavern, but it has been released as a part of a national campaign. And if you do not hear the sound of boots striking pavement as they march, if you do not hear the sounds of fascist cheering, you have different hearing than I do. Yeah, thank you. Oh, and by the way, this is what they released instead of, say, jumping out and defending Philando Castile, who was a law-abiding permit carrying, gun-owning, legal possessor of a firearm who was, you know, murdered in cold blood while reaching for his wallet. Nope, the NRA is not going to, because he's not the right color to defend. ladies and gentlemen, Dana Loesch of the National Rifle Association, and a call to war.
They use their media to assassinate real news. They use their schools to teach children that their president...
Well, great. Looks like a little blue screen of death there. Okay, going to have to sort that out. But this is too important just to let it blow by. So I'll bring it up on another machine. This is why we have multiple machines. It doesn't get much more disturbing than this. Just one second. Damn it. Sorry for the silence. This is where production staff comes in real handy. Like I said, I deem this to be that important. Because the NRA has more or less declared open season on its political opponents. And they've got lots and lots and lots of guns. Here, I've got it now. Like I said, it's more than a little disturbing.
They use their media to assassinate real news. They use their schools to teach children that their president is another Hitler. They use their movie stars and singers and comedy shows and award shows to repeat their narrative over and over again. And then they use their ex-president to endorse the resistance. All to make them march, make them protest, make them scream racism and sexism and xenophobia and homophobia.
Some days you just can't win. Let's try this again. Different computer. Could be the most important piece of video, audio, that I have run in recent memory. And I'm having the devil's own time getting it out. Oh. Oh, I do so hate dead air. We have talked from time to time about eliminationism on this program. David Nywert did a brilliant expose of eliminationism. And my God, this is that in all wrapped up in red, white, and blue. Check it from the top.
They use their media to assassinate real news. They use their schools to teach children that their president is another Hitler. They use their movie stars and singers and comedy shows and award shows to repeat their narrative over and over again. And then they use their ex-president to endorse the resistance. All to make them march, make them protest, make them scream racism and sexism and xenophobia and homophobia, to smash windows, burn cars, shut down interstates and airports, bully and terrorize the law-abiding, until the only option left is for the police to do their jobs and stop the madness. And when that happens, they'll use it as an excuse for their outrage. The only way we stop this, the only way we save our country and our freedom, is to fight this violence of lies with the clenched fist of truth. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
Freedom. You know, the freedom that you get when you get blown away by freedom's safest place. You know what? I got a cowbell for this one. In regard to Philando Castile, Brother Deacon Asa says, can we just start calling it the white to bear arms from now on? Yes, I think we can. I think we can. The white to bear arms. The closed fist? Jesus, the last time I heard closed fist, it was a guy in a domestic violence hearing saying, oh, hell, I don't understand why I never even hit her with my closed fist. Jesus. God Almighty. All right, let's check in with Jim real quick. Hey, Jim. Yo, Jim. I lost Jim. Dadgummit. Some days the magic works, some days it doesn't. Uh, 25 minutes past the hour, and thanks very kindly to Terry, who just became a brand new subscriber for this evening. Thank you, Terry. And thank you to Charlene. We have met the challenges posed by both Ralphs and Mike and Cascadia. So that takes us down to 310 to go to finish out the week, and another 110 just to finish out this evening. There's Jim.
Ralph.
Jim. Oh, Jim.
Yes.
There you are.
Your phone. Volume is really low. It's better now.
Well, I'm not doing anything. I haven't touched anything.
Well, it must be Eagle or somebody like that, but I believe you, okay?
Okay. And you need to turn down the speakers, please.
They're off.
No, I mean, I hear me in the background.
They're off.
Okay.
What you hear in the background is Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, but I cut the sound off it, too.
Well, I always thought I sounded a little like Richard Burton, too.
You know, I can just imagine that first line of that thing, what Elizabeth Taylor said, and it would be the first thing I would say if I were walking into the halls of Congress. What a dump.
It has been reduced to that, has it not?
Sure has. And I'll tell you one thing with Mantan Trump, that's going to be a real barn burner. It already is.
And, you know, nothing. Nothing we can do about it. I wish there was something other to say, but what is there, Jim? What can be done?
I don't know. You mentioned something about Caligula, well, or Claudius. Well, you know, there were always interesting ways to deal with problems, you know.
Yeah.
Claudius liked mushrooms, and Caligula, well, who is what he likes except
Nero,
for crazy.
Nero liked to kick people.
He what,
Nero? Nero liked to kick people. He kicked his he kicked his pregnant wife to death.
Oh yeah, what's her name? Not Sabina or what was her name?
Offhand, I can't recall.
Yeah, he did. He did kick his pregnant wife to death, and then cried morosely over her corpse, so to speak, as according to Suetonius. Who knows? But I don't know, with Trump and some of the people he's got up there, you know, we are facing a real constitutional crisis. And we could see our government change with this type of attitude if this man has his way.
Well, the idea of... And now the idea that the NRA has called on its right wing denizens, its dead enders and losers and white to bear arms types, to gun up against anybody with whom they disagree.
Oh yeah, and that thing with Scalise, that's exactly what they wanted. Oh God, was that a godsend to them?
Sure it was, because, yeah, I mean, it obviously it's the left that's violent. You know, never mind all the other manifestations of violence, but, you know.
Well, they certainly made a long story out of the guy who shot him, who was killed later, but he was a Democrat and voted for Clinton and stuff like that, and was a lifelong Democrat, age 50 plus, I don't know. But they lost no effort to bring that to the fore. That's for damn sure.
Well, they'll never miss an opportunity. Republicans are very, very good at waving the bloody shirt, Jim.
Of course they are. I mean, they've done that for so many years. I mean, my God, that song should have been set to music a long time ago.
Well, I don't know. I truly wish that I had some sort of broad form explanation for exactly what's going on here and where it's going, and that any explanation that I might offer wouldn't be terrifying. It's the kind of thing where when you've got little kids and they're hearing their first thunderstorm and they're scared and the lightning is flashing, and you, baby, it's just weather. It'll all be over in a little bit. Everything's going to be okay. Pat him on the back.
Mm-hmm.
That's not available, Jim.
Oh, I know. How well I know. As a matter of fact, it would not surprise me if the Congress would, with the machinations of McConnell and God only knows who else, pass some type of enabling act to further expand Trump's powers. It's been done before, you know.
Oh, I know. So you tell me, Jim, where's it end?
I think it ends with our Constitution being the same things that happened to the Weimar Constitution is going to be what happens to ours. It's going to be literally signed out of existence by the very people whom we represent and are sent there to represent us. That's what I think that's what's going to happen eventually. I hope I'm wrong. But you talk about the worst possible situation. I don't think you get any worse than that.
Is it possible that we're going to get into something we can't get? And I'm not. I'm talking about beyond that. Could we be getting into something we can't get out of?
Possibly. Very possibly. I mean, we've come so close to it so many times. That, and I'm not talking about the Cuban Missile Crisis, okay? I mean, there was one incident, and I can name many, I'll just name one. There was a Russian lieutenant colonel who was on guard at a Soviet missile base, okay? And he saw these strange things coming over his horizon that were like American warheads. And he had sense enough to realize, and he was being urged on, let him go, let him go. But yet he stood his ground and said, no, no, no. And it was simply a commercial airplane. And there have been other times when they've had, you know, anomalies in nature that have triggered their radar to go off. Now, I don't know what kind of radar people they have or what type of detection system they have in place. I would imagine they're quite sophisticated. But it's not going to take much to push people over into a situation that they might think that nuclear conflagration is winnable.
Well, did you happen to see that release of information from the White House about we expect Assad is going to launch another chemical attack any minute now, and by God, we're going to do something about it if they do?
Yes, I did. Sure did. I can imagine what he's going to do. And I can imagine how Mr. Putin is going to react to that. Of course, haven't those people under Assad shot down Russian planes, too?
I'm not sure offhand, but I know that, you know, now that we're shooting down Iranian drones and shooting down Syrian MiGs. And it...
Well, there
and
you
I,
go.
And I remember when the Purity Left was screaming, Hillary will get us into World War III with Russia.
Hmm. I don't know. I wouldn't count on that. Like I say, we don't know really what's going on over there other than a bunch of oligarchs who are ruling the country under the hand of Putin. And as before, they had a very highly structured government which had control over the military and the Soviet strategic rocket forces and things of that nature. And, you know, all these stuff are dependent upon men sitting at consoles, looking at screens. And it doesn't take a whole lot for one to call in something or not be able to call in something because he's not been able to maintain these facilities properly. And he just might take a chance. I mean, there are all kinds of hardliners over there who believe that they can win because of the size of their country any type of war in the world.
How'd that work out with Afghanistan?
Huh?
How'd that work out with Afghanistan?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think they've got enough of Afghanistan. I mean, you know, if they can get back into it without all the trouble they had with the, you know, Charlie Wilson's war over there, I think they would probably love to absorb it. But, I mean, what can they do with it?
I mean, if they think they can win any war anywhere, Afghanistan kind of put paid to that notion, just like it put paid to our notion.
I mean, what would be the material benefit of them absorbing Afghanistan into their empire, so to speak?
The trillions of dollars of rare earth elements that are under the dirt there?
Yeah, I think you say that. Tungsten. And rare earth elements, yes, of course. But, you know, I think the Russians, have enough of their own in their own and their own country. I mean, they saw what happened to Afghanistan. Shit, that whole thing caused the collapse of the Soviet Union. I mean, you talk about the graveyard of empires. It was definitely one for them.
And you know what? It may prove to be the same with us.
Yeah. I don't know what we've done.
Indirectly, but the same with us.
But I don't know what we're doing over there. I don't understand it.
We're protecting those minerals because we don't want China to have them.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Well, China's going to get them whether we want them to or not, because China's right next to them, and they can move in there with a force that could dwarf ours, and there was nothing we could do about it except try to have some type of thermonuclear war, which even China believes is unwinnable. And, of course, you've got these hotbed Arab countries and stuff like that. There's been such a proliferation of nuclear materials among smaller nations. Those are the ones you have to worry about. It's not the big boys, because the big boys know what will happen. But you've got some of these jihadists and some of these ultra-right-wing things who are in charge. I call them things, not people, who have great influence in the Middle East. And, you know, they can possibly pull the trigger. They really can.
Well, that's why I've talked for years about, you know, not that I'm any fan of the theocracy in Iran, but if you're just reasonable about it, Jim, and you look at and you have a working comprehension of, you know, maps, if you're Iran and you know that the Saudi Arabians can play us like a pawn shop fiddle, and that's one of your neighbors, and you look over there and there's the Pakistanis, whose government could fall into the hands of Sunni wackadoodles at any time, who hate
True.
Your guts. And then there's India, the world's largest democracy.
No, I don't think so.
That has nuclear weapons and really hates Pakistan. And, well, you know, some of that shit could blow downwind toward Iran.
True.
You know, you've got a pretty good reason for thinking you might want your own. Because the only way it seems that you can be guaranteed to be left the hell alone, look at North Korea. I mean, it's North Korea. There's nothing. I mean, okay, so they got a million starving person army. But, and they got China sitting, you know, just to their immediate north. But we deal with kid gloves with North Korea. Because, you know, nuclear power.
I think North Korea could really be a stone in China's shoe. I really do. And I feel that one day China will have to go in there and take care of that. I mean, it just gets wilder and wilder and wilder. Have you seen the accolades that they attribute to Kim Jong-un?
The what?
Those accolades that are attributed over...
The state propaganda. It's a hoot.
I mean, have you heard those things? How he has made planets stop on their courses and all kinds of miracles and stuff like that, and has prolonged the day because the sun has stopped and we have stopped rotating around the sun. I mean, they're just fairy tales, but these people, you know, have to believe it, or they're going to end up, you know, with a dirt nap.
Look at the story of Otto von Bier, you know, who recently died having been arrested in North Korea a year ago.
Oh yeah,
The story on that was that he had been arrested for trying to steal a propaganda poster. And for the said crime was sentenced to 15 years at hard labor.
And it killed him.
Well, yeah. And it, you know, it could very well be, you know, maybe he did try to steal the poster. That sounds like the kind of college boy stunt that some American abroad might try to do.
You know, Bob, that would be a real stupid thing to do, particularly knowing what a college student might know of North Korea. He was very stupid in trying to do that, because that place is controlled tighter than a vice.
Right.
And you know it, and I know it.
And then,
he paid for it with his life.
And he paid for it with his life. And, you know, now that the tour company says, we will no longer take Americans to North Korea. Oh, well, I'm glad that dawned on you.
Well, what about Dennis Rodman? I just wonder what his dealings with Kim Il-Jung are.
Well, you know, if Dennis Rodman isn't really an American so much as he's an extraterrestrial. He comes from a different planet. He's from Norblap 9. So,
yeah, he is.
You know, so it could be that he gets to North Korea and morphs into this gelatinous protoplasmic thing with an indeterminate number of limbs and appendages and stuff, and there's nothing they can do to him. But
what does that tell you about Kim Jong
Un?
What does that tell you? He's fucking crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's just absolutely nuts. And he's not operating with a full deck. I mean, they packed that boy's picnic
basket. Well, but the problem
is, many short of sandwiches.
I would say, yeah, and he is not the he's not the sharpest knife in the chandelier.
No, I mean, he's sharp enough to.
But the thing is, we've lost. Well, we didn't lose it. We gave it up. We gave up the moral high ground necessary to be able to point to him and say, well, you know, he's crazy. He's a danger to the entire world.
Well, that's true. And we're getting to the point now where he's developing missiles, those Type P missiles or whatever they call them now, that have now the capability of reaching San Francisco and cities on the West Coast. And you know what our military doctrine says about that. I mean, once they have discovered that he can put one into the Bay Area, something's going to happen right there. And I do believe that. Absolutely.
Yeah, but that's a level of, I mean, that's a level of insanity that is difficult to comprehend. And I don't think he's that crazy. I think given the ancient animosities of the region, I think before he ever dropped anything into San Francisco Bay, he'd be more likely to drop something into Tokyo Bay.
Oh, perhaps, but you know, as far as loss of life is concerned, loss of life means nothing to those people. Even Chairman Mao, when they asked him how many people were lost, he said, oh, 1 million, as if it were nothing. More than 1 million. Hell, he probably killed more people than Stalin did. I mean, he really did. I mean, it was really bad over there. And that Cultural Revolution, good God, that was a virtual bloodbath.
I don't think there was anything virtual about it. You know, a good point here coming from Asa, who says, by the way, how are North Korea's state propaganda fairy tales any different than Russian state media's video footage of Putiput diving at the beach and accidentally finding a 2,000-year-old antique vase?
Not much.
Not bloody much.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I can remember when the Russian Foreign Office, or TASS, or be it Red TASS or White TASS, would it be at least put up stuff and put out stuff that was reasonably believable, and you never heard of any people like Mikoyan or Stalin or Buganin or Khrushchev or Andropov diving into the Caspian Sea and pulling up any type of precious artifact. I mean, they at least have a sense of.
There was
restraint.
Never a photograph of a shirtless Khrushchev or Stalin just out spending some casual time horseback riding, was there?
But now they've gone down, you know, they've gone down to that. And basically, I feel that they essentially have taken that lesson from us and our own media stuff. It did take a whole lot to urge it forward, but I really think they've taken a whole lot of that shit from American television, American this, that, and the other. And they say, well, you know, we believe these people in America believe this stuff. Well, if it'll work for them, it'll work for us because we have greater control over our people than they ever did on us. You know? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it kind of does. It does.
I mean, you know, they have a lot of, you know, they can take a picture of Putin and make him look like Superman on a white charger, and they can do a hell of a lot with it. And other things he's supposedly done, I mean, you know, it's just real crazy what these people are pretending their leaders should do, whether it's Kim Jong-un stopping the rotation of the Earth. That's the latest one I heard. I don't even know if you heard that one. And making time stand still for an hour, or Putin doing some of his stuff. I would think he'd be a little bit smarter than that, but made a note. But, you know, that Putin is a real, real fox.
Well, he wasn't sitting around making paper airplanes when he was going to KGB University, I don't reckon.
No. As a matter of fact, he was a lieutenant colonel in the KGB in Dresden. And when the Soviet Union collapsed, he was the only man in the building, and he, according to so much hagiography, was able to stand off a mass crowd outside the Soviet embassy and stop them from coming in and getting all their secret material, which they had not been able to destroy. And, of course, Putin has his roots back with his grandfather to they served in Lenin's household.
In charge
His
of bringing
grandmother and grandfather both served in Lenin's household.
In charge of keeping the samovar full.
Well, they were servants. They were just, you know, people who kept the fires burning and the samovar full, and Lenin and his confederates, I guess, comfortable during the cold Russian winter, and they were greatly rewarded for their efforts. What I don't imagine is how in the hell do these people escape Stalin's purges? Because he killed everybody else that was close to Lenin, that's for damn sure. But these people were such that they were just servants. They weren't politicians.
They flew under the radar.
They drew the water and used the wood, basically. And maybe gave Lenin's cat a pat. That's about it. And cooked his dinner and stuff like that. And they were trusted because no poison ever got into it. And, of course, you know what happened to Lenin when he got shot, and he never recovered from that. And then he had a cerebral hemorrhage, and I heard that the doctors did an autopsy on him and put some type of instrument against his head that sounded like a gong. Well, I don't know. I mean, who's to say about what happens in that country? I mean, they are so secretive.
Well, look, I mentioned James Garfield the other night. That man was killed by his doctor, not by a bullet, and was subjected to all manner of medical quackery. They were literally feeding him meals rectally, thinking that would keep him nutritionally sound.
Now, I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with this. Could you tell me what happened here?
Well, President James Garfield.
Garfield, yeah.
Yeah, who was assassinated. He lingered for weeks and weeks while the doctors killed him.
Well, weren't they trying to use a newly developed X-ray machine on him?
They tried to do everything, including putting roast beef and mashed potatoes up his butt.
Well, I've heard that particular area is pretty absorptive, but I don't know a whole
lot.
Well,
no, the only reason I mention is because some of this quackery retains a certain amount of currency because I believe it was with Guantanamo, some of our concentration camp detainees at Guantanamo, that if they hunger fasted, we tortured them, or it was advocated that we torture them by what was referred to as rectal feeding.
Yeah.
Which no medical science acknowledges has any worth whatsoever. Jim, once again, I've taken the conversation into the gutter. I apologize for that, but we're nearing the end of the program, and I'm going to run on. But it is always a pleasure.
Well.
It's always a pleasure chatting with you. You have yourself
okay,
a good evening.
I love to talk to you between now and then. I hope you get back for your program tomorrow night and have a meaningful 4th of July with your family.
Yeah, I'm going to sit down and do what I always do, read the Declaration of Independence. Thanks, Jim. Have
good
a good
barbecue.
Evening.
Thank you.
Nah, not for me. Maybe I could have some hickory smoked yogurt or something. But
okay.
Later, Jim.
Bye.
Bye now. And so we find ourselves coming close to the end of the program. I wanted to send out special thanks to Stephen. Thank you very kindly for helping get us to where we need to be. Thank you, Stephen, very, very, very much. That takes us down to $280 to go in fundraising for the evening. It'd be awfully nice if we could knock down the last $80 or so, or even the $280 before the program ends, or say between now and tomorrow night, or whatever. Again, I don't plan to be absent from the microphone tomorrow night, but there is an outside chance I will be, depending on how long the appointment lasts in Charleston tomorrow. But we got $280 to go, and bills to pay. So, okay, how about one? Let's walk back. Let's just sort of walk ourselves back from, Republican determinations that poor people aren't grateful and responsible enough. I've got a clip here. Had we but a little bit more time, maybe for tomorrow. A doctor by the name of Mark Siegel, who seems to be another member of the of that cadre of folks who think that that those poor people are out there just having way too much fun at the hospital. Yeah, these people. But no, let's wrap it up. Let's wrap it up with something else. You know, one of the problems with world travel is you have to be careful, very, very careful, when you travel to backward third world countries. I mean, there's shots, there's malaria shots, and you got to be careful about your Ebola and your dengue fever and your bushmaster snakes and yeah, all kinds of nasty stuff out there. Funnel web spiders in Australia, deadly. But you tend to think that maybe you're safe if you go to, like, an internationally known American chain. Feeling a little nervous about the paella down there in Spain? Well, hell, just wander on over to the Golden Arches. They'll have a real con queso for you, just waiting. You want a cup of Java? Maybe not from some street vendor, because you're an American, and you want to be able to, and you know you can trust corporations to keep you safe. Well, like I said, it doesn't matter if you are in a backward third world country, you can even get into trouble at good corporate outlets. What if I were to tell you that three different major coffee chains in a country have been found to have ice that contains coliform bacteria? You know, coliform bacteria that appears or occurs primarily in, you know, human poo. I'll have a half calf. Soy decaf macchiato with extra E. coli. It's true. I said backward third world countries because the story comes out of the UK. Starbucks, Cafe Nero, and Costa Coffee, all of them had shocking amounts of coliform bacteria in sampled ice that was sampled by the BBC. And yes, coliform bacteria come from the intestines of mammals like us, including Escherichia coli, which we simply call E. coli, the 157H7 variety, which can kill you. BBC researchers tested cleanliness of tables, trays, and high chairs at 30 different locations of each of the chains. Seven out of 10 samples of ice at Costa Coffee had E. coli in them. Three out of 10 samples from Starbucks and Cafe Nero had, you know, poo molecules in them. Tony Lewis, a spokesman for the Chartered Institute of Environmental Health, quoted in the Telegraph, said, "The level of contamination of fecal bacteria concerns me a great deal. The bacteria are opportunistic pathogens, the source of human disease. They should not be present at any level, never mind the significant numbers found. All employees nationwide," this was a Starbucks spokesman, "all employees nationwide have received updated training on our high standards of hygiene, including ice handling." Meanwhile, a Costa Coffee spokesperson said, "We were disappointed with the findings, especially as these stores are all rated very good with the top hygiene rating of 5. Robert in Australia asks, "Has that anything to do with the UK having privatized its water supply a decade or two back?" Maybe. And this is just one of those little comparative moments. You know, before dirty, disease-bearing white colonial Europeans arrived in the New World, the Mexica Empire, which I've studied over the expert, but I know some things, managed to provide clean drinking water, clean, safe drinking water, to a city of over 1 million. In what was then Tenochtitlan. Interestingly, the white colonial disease-ridden Europeans have never to this day been able to make the same claim the indigenous people did. How about that? Progress! But if you're getting a coffee in the UK, maybe you don't want to have it at Costa Coffee or Cafe Nero or Starbucks, just saying. Thank you very kindly, Frank, for helping out this evening. Thank you very much indeed. That takes us down to $250 to go on the evening. And hopefully we'll knock it out with a Friday on the Front Porch miracle tomorrow evening. And hopefully I'll, you know, be here. I'll tweet one way or the other and Facebook one way or the other. So follow me on Facebook. And follow me on Twitter, at Bob Kincaid on Twitter and Bob Kincaid on Facebook. And I'll let you know just as soon as I find out whether I'm going to be here. Let's cross our fingers that I will be. Thanks to everybody who contributes to keep the program going. Thanks to all of you who listen and share your precious finite time engaged in this discussion in whatever way you choose to engage. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve from Georgia Stan in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you very kindly to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook. And always, 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 Gina. It's all for you. Good night, y'all.